Good morning, everybody. We're just waiting for Commissioner Leonard, who will be sworn in. We should probably wait, right?
Well, you could do something before and then maybe come.
Do you want to do the communications? Okay. You want to do communications? Oh. Good afternoon, or good morning, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. The previous mayor took the gavel, so I guess I'll use the phone. I hereby call the 2009 session of the Portland City Council to order. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Leonard? Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. We'll begin with the normal slots for communications. This is an opportunity for the public to sign up, which you can do at the auditor's office for to make a three-minute statement to the city and to your city council. Carla, will you please call or please read the first communication?
Yes. Number one, request of Richard Elmire to address council regarding accountability for public housing spending and policy making.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
How are you?
Just fine. Glad to be here. My name is Richard Elmire. I first came to this building in 1975 as chair of the North Community Action Council to meet Mayor Goldschmidt and discuss my neighborhood issues. I'm still here doing that today. The council's indefensible and appalling support for the discredited and abhorrent public policy of unlimited neighborhood concentration of public housing must stop. The council's refusal to support a policy of equitable distribution of public housing must stop. The Council's failure to hold the Housing Authority of Portland accountable for providing public housing statistical data must stop. The Council must reverse its indefensible support for the illegitimate leasing of the John Ball School surplus city property for private use, which violated the Portland Public Schools condition of sale requiring public use of this public land. The Council must either A, determine through due process a public use for the John Ball School site, which is acceptable to the Portland Public School Board and the owners of this public property, that is, the citizens of Portland, or B, return the John Ball School property for a full $800,000 refund. The Council must state unequivocally that no city bureau is permitted to support and fund with taxpayer dollars any tax-exempt organization that refuses to allow their own members and the elected members of the Portland City Council access to their list of eligible voters, especially those groups recognized by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. The Council must acknowledge the dysfunctional and stealthy, undemocratic system of five-fiefdom fiat government, which has insidiously overtaken our City Hall and denied checks and balances to democracy Portlanders as Americans expect and deserve. At least one commissioner must reject management of any bureau to become an honest public policy broker. The game of you don't mess with my bureau and I won't mess with yours must stop. Finally, the council must gain control of the skyrocketing costs of public employee health insurance premiums, which can rise to an outrageous height of $1,246 per month. It must instruct the city Salem lobbyists to support the introduction of the Oregon Community Health Care Bill, which can decrease the city's health care costs by 20% as a competing model for the future of Oregon health care reform. It must instruct the city Salem lobbyists to oppose Senate Bill 329 as too complicated, costly, developed without due process and debate involving the competitive idea of a single-payer type model, and relies on the despised, failed, for-profit private health insurance industry model. I first came to this building in 1975 to fight to improve the quality of life in North Portland. I'm still here, and I'll be back.
Thank you, Richard. Carla?
Number two, request of Roger P. Gron to address council regarding Water Bureau policies.
Mr. Gron? Let's move on to item number three.
Request of Nola Rathburn to address council regarding funding, accountability, process, and concentration of public housing.
Good morning, Nola. How are you?
Fine, thank you. A little nervous. I've never been here before.
Well, all you have to do is say your name and watch the clock. You'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much.
We are.
You seem to be. Thank you.
You just look scary, that's all.
A little intimidating. My name is Inola Rathburn. I live at 8606 North Foss Avenue in Portland, directly across from the old John Ball Elementary School site. I bought my house on Foss 11 and a half years ago. The new Columbia Villa is approximately 3 blocks from my house. I understand that 3 full-time uniformed police officers are assigned to the villa. This proves that public housing of this type has increased crime and or violence, i.e. gang-related crimes. My concern is the overloading of public housing in North Portland, specifically the Portland Hope Meadows that is slated for the John Ball School site. If built, Hope Meadows will include a at-risk youth, foster care, and elderly housing. If this project is allowed to go forward, it is highly possible that the elderly could be harmed physically or emotionally by those youth, and at-risk youth could cause physical harm to neighbors and or our property, increase drug activity, which obviously is a problem currently in North Portland, and our property values will dramatically lower and crime will increase. I understand the 3 uniformed police officers at Columbia Villa regularly deal with gang-related crimes. We don't need and certainly don't want any more gang-related activity in our neighborhood. I feel that due process has not been followed when the city decided to sell public property, being the John Ball School site, to a private entity and not asking the homeowners in the neighborhood whether we wanted such a public housing community built on that site. In fact, I've received no formal notification from the city that the John Ball School property had been sold, and no formal notification from the city as to what is scheduled to be built on that site. Since that site is public property, how can the city decide on their own without neighborhood involvement, without due process, to use that land for anything other than for public use? The Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Area Committee submitted a letter to the PDC on November 7, 07, stating that their study proved that North Portland already has more than the recommended cap of 15% public housing. In fact, Portsmouth neighborhood in North Portland has approximately 30% public housing. That committee advised the PDC in that letter to stop all future funding for public housing in the Portsmouth neighborhood. Yet the city has approved more public housing, such as Hope Meadows, for North Portland. How can that be? North Portland has no chance of attracting new quality, sustainable businesses with so much public housing. I would like the city to reconsider approving any more public housing in North Portland. I would also like the city to stop the Hope Meadows project and use that property of the John Ball School site for public use, such as a library, a park, a community garden, etc. Finally, and most importantly, I would like the city to follow proper due process in the matter of authorizing any more public housing for North Portland. Thank you.
You did great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number four.
Request of Damian A. Shockwin to address council regarding public housing issues.
Good morning, Mr. Shockwin.
Good morning, Mr. Adams.
How are you?
I'm like her. This is the first time.
Well, it's...
Welcome.
Welcome. It's...
You guys look very civil.
We try.
Okay.
Well, all you have to do is just say your name and you can watch that clock in front.
Hey. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the City Council. My name is Damian Shockwin. I am here to address you on the issue of low-cost, publicly funded housing. There has been an inequity in the placement of publicly subsidized housing. While the need for housing subsidies is real, the placement and distribution among the neighborhoods is far from what we could possibly be called fair. We have some neighborhoods such as Portsmouth, Centennial, Lentz, Powellhurst, Gilbert, which have the highest concentrations of public subsidized housing as opposed to Woodlawn Park, Arlington Heights, Forest Park, etc. When you look at the population numbers for all the neighborhoods and look at the amount of subsidized housing, there is no way that any agency could possibly claim an equitable equitable dispersal of subsidized housing throughout Portland. The message is a very clear one. This is okay, but not in my neighborhood. Doesn't this create a caste system within our wonderful city? What's next, profiling in Westmoreland? Just where is the proverbial other side of the tracks? What message does this send to the people we're trying to help with the assistance? Here, we'll help, but not if you live, but you have to live here. You can't live there. I have read about the 5-10-15 proposal and think it sends a wonderful message to all the neighborhoods in Portland. It says, yes, we will all pull together and shoulder the responsibility for the housing subsidies. How can we really expect any one neighborhood to shoulder 52%, 18%, 13% when 32 separate neighborhoods have percentages ranging from less than 3% down to virtually zero? I ask the City Council to look at all of Portland, not just the high-end parts of Portland, but look at the heart of Portland, the working men and women who truly are the bread and butter of Portland. Some neighborhoods have both parents working hard to try and achieve the American dream, but how can we say to them that the dream can happen, that the system works for everybody when the neighborhood has such an imbalance from the more affluent areas of Portland? The median income here in Portland is $40,000 a year. This is $4,000 less than national average. Portsmouth median is $33,000. The percentage of subsidized housing is, I thought it was 18%, but it's, from what I read, 14,000 clients. Forest Park median income is $96,000. The percentage of subsidized housing is 0.80, six clients. The descriptors between the two neighborhoods are great as you can imagine, but how about the descriptors between the other 32 neighborhoods below the 3% subsidy and the 12 highest subsidy neighborhoods all over 9%? My question to you, Mr. Mayor, and to all the city commissioners, with all due respect, knowing this is a new administration, is Portland, Oregon, a city of golden rule, where he who has the gold makes the rules, or is it truly the innovative and progressive place that is always promoted in the press? All of Portland will await your answer. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
All right. I have to admit now I'm torn. Commissioner Leonard can't vote until he's sworn in.
That's right.
Can I talk, though?
Oh, that's true. And we have no control over you, I guess. Yeah. Shall we take a pause, Council, for the swearing in of City Commissioner Randy
Leonard? I would greatly appreciate that.
All right.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Randy Leonard.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the constitutions of the United States.
That I will support the constitutions of the United States.
And of the state of Oregon.
And of the state of Oregon.
The charter of the city of Portland.
The charter of the city of Portland.
And its laws.
And its laws.
I will faithfully, honestly, and ethically.
I will faithfully, honestly, and ethically.
Perform my duties as commissioner.
Perform my duties as commissioner.
I have no undisclosed financial interest.
I have no undisclosed financial interest.
In any business located in Portland.
In any business located in Portland.
Or having contracts.
Or having contracts.
I hold no other office or position of profit.
I hold no other office or position of profit.
And I am not a member.
And I am not a member.
Of any partisan political committee.
Of any partisan political committee.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Yeah. All right, with a full complement of city commissioners, we're now ready to dive into the consent agenda. There are seven items on the consent agenda. Carla, prior to this meeting, has anyone requested an item be pulled from the consent agenda?
No one has prior to.
All right. Is there anyone on the council that wants to pull an item from the consent agenda? Is there anyone in the room that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? Carla, I think we're ready to vote on the consent agenda.
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Consent agenda passes. Thank you. Commissioner Fish for the backup gavel. I appreciate that. let's hear council calendar item number 5.
We need to elect the new president of the council.
Oh, that's what we do now. All right, so this is on a rotational basis, and next in line is Commissioner Randy Leonard.
It's a big day. It is a big day.
Do I hear a motion to elect Commissioner Randy Leonard president of the City Council?
I so move.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there debate?
Before we vote on this, could I have a clear understanding of the scope of authority that the president of the council has?
I'll send you a memo after the meeting.
If I get wounded or further incapacitated, he takes over.
Everything.
Wow. All right, let's take the vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Now we're ready to go to consider agenda item number 5, time certain.
Revise retail sales and service regulations for Division Main Street through the Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package 4.
So, I think this is a second reading.
It says previous agenda item.
So isn't that right, City Attorney, this second reading? Yes, it is. I know that it is.
It was pulled for separate consideration.
Right. So under discussion, which I'm assuming you'd entertain at this point, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, I first wanted to determine whether anyone on council who had not been here before would like to get a briefing or had questions of staff.
I would appreciate a short briefing on account of the website being down last night. I wasn't able to watch the entire transcript.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year. If you could give us
I do have a general concept, though. It doesn't need to be long at all.
So a concise summary of what's the issue in front of us, please.
Okay. Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. My name is Eric Engstrom. I'm here with Phil Namony, and we're representing the soon-to-be Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And as you said, this is the second reading on this item. It concerns some changes to a plan district regulation on Division Street, and I'm going to let Phil very briefly go through what those issues are and the implications of a yes or no vote at this point.
And I won't spend a lot of time, but I believe we handed out a little flyer here that has a brief overview on the first page and then has the actual code language within it.
I apologize. For the record, your name is?
My name is Phil Namony, Bureau of Planning. Bureau of Sustainability and Planning?
Planning and Sustainability.
We'll get that when we hear the next ordinance. And just to create a brief overview, the Division Green Street Main Street plan created regulations that limited retail sales and service to 10,000 square feet per use. And this has created some issues with a specific location. That location went through an adjustment process. There's been some holdups on that in appeals. The Neighborhood Association, the Business Association, as well as the property owner came to the Planning Commission and requested that the Planning Commission direct us to find a legislative solution to this. And that is, in essence, what is before you here. What the solution does is it allows some additional flexibility to exceed the 10,000 square foot maximum limitation, but that only applies to existing buildings and to floors other than the ground floor. And the logic behind that was the fact that the smaller size on the ground floor would maintain the storefront atmosphere along the ground floor, but would allow certain buildings that may have space up above to use that also for retail sales and service. What I put here is kind of a quick little thing, you know, what the council vote means here, both in general and as regards to the specific Wild Oats site, which is what generated the greatest amount of testimony. And so basically the yes vote would allow, in the case of the Wild Oats site, it would allow them to put in a retail sales and service that would be limited to 10,000 square feet on the ground floor, but would be able to utilize the entire second floor of that site. There's a no vote, basically the regulations would stay as they are. For Wild Oats, that would mean that their options would be they could, and I don't know if Commissioner Leonard is going to go into this in greater detail, but they could work with BDS staff and the Adjustment Committee to take the adjustment back to the adjustment committee and reanalyze it with the potential for appeal to LUBA for the exceeding the 10,000 square feet for that specific site. The other options that the property owner could do if there is a no vote is they could, you know, look into investing into the property to create new tenant spaces that meet the code. And then the third option, they could always go ahead and demolish the building and redevelop the site. So that's sort of a quick little overview. I did put a couple of other options. If you wanted to kind of look at something more holistically, or if there's certain aspects of the code you would want to adopt while not adopting others, that kind of what that addresses.
So if I could clarify one thing you said that with the adoption of the proposed changes, that the second floor could be used, but I think isn't it more accurate to say that with the adoption of these changes, given that they don't apply just to this property, they apply from Southeast 12th to 60th, there is unlimited amount of space that can be used on a second floor by a retailer, obviously given the restrictions of the dimensions of a given piece of property.
The proposed code applies to existing buildings, so it's not unlimited, but it would be limited by the number of existing buildings, which I understand is about 14, and then it would also be limited by the total floor area ratio of the zoning, whatever that building might have.
Okay.
I was basically
certainly more than 10,000 square feet.
Yes.
Right. And I was just saying what it would mean for that particular site.
Right.
Granted, Wild Oats only has currently a second floor.
So if you apply, so do the calculations for me. It's 14 buildings that it theoretically applies to, and the swath of land that this would change, this council action would make changes on, and then go further. How many buildings of the 14 would be able to do for themselves what we would do for this site?
Some percentage of a lot of those buildings are condominiums or other things that are already carved up into things that are unlikely to be redeveloped into retail. So it's probably, three or four buildings that are where it would be economically viable to do something different. The best other example would be at 39th and Division. There's a Rite Aid building there that's currently one story, and theoretically, under this change, that building could be expanded. Since it's an existing building that's over that size limit, it could be expanded, and this would allow that to have a larger use on it as well. So that's another implication.
Could you remind me, when we, I don't know whether it was the first or the second time we took this up, we had a discussion about whether we could put a cap on the amount of expansion on the second floor or other floors. And I believe we heard from the applicant as to some formula that might be acceptable, but I don't remember that. Would you refresh my memory on that?
You could do something like that. That's not in the proposal that we drafted, but you could amend it in some way like that. It is still ultimately capped by the floor area of the base zone,
existing zoning.
Yeah. So,
under this proposal, could someone be concerned that in one of the 14 opportunity sites or four most likely opportunity sites, could someone be concerned that there could be unlimited, that there could be significant expansion to the zoning code of additional floors going up?
The floor area ratio than the height limit in that district, as I understand it, is ultimately you couldn't get beyond three or four stories and still be in compliance with those standards. So it's not extreme in the amount that would increase, but you could add potentially, like at the Rite Aid site, at least another floor and maybe two, depending on.
Isn't the limit five stories?
It depends on the height limit and how tall you're going to do the ceiling.
I think a lot of it is 45 feet. There might be some bonus if you do residential. I would have to look at the division.
Rite Aid is one story.
Correct. Right. So you could probably at least add two stories to a building like that, and unless you were to impose some kind of cap, as you just suggested.
Okay, other discussion with council? It is the council's prerogative to take testimony, even though it's a second reading. I wasn't here for the first. Did we have a sign-up sheet?
Oh, we did not.
Okay. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on this matter before we discuss further? Sir, come forward.
Mayor Adams, Council.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Stan Amy. I just wanted to comment on the concept of a cap.
which for me seems like an effective way to address the concerns here. And speak to our particular case. In our case, we'd like to see a cap that, in terms of a percentage increase to the size of the building, that didn't simply apply to the second floor, but applied to the entire building. Our reason is where we would be interested in increasing the size of our building is that we have a unused loading dock, a niche out of the side of the building. So we clearly want to go to the ground floor, and we also have another niche out of the building area. So, and I just picked up when Commissioner Fish was speaking, he specified second floor, and I wanted to be clear that just to clarify that from our perspective.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Amy, excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Forgive me for repeating some of the questions I'm going to ask you, but we have two members that weren't here at the last council, and I think it could be edifying for them to listen to my questions and your answers. I've received a lot of emails on this topic during the process of it going from the Planning Commission to us from neighborhoods. And the emails, although I'm not looking at one right now, are very close to what I will, the following summary that I'll give you. Dear Commissioner Leonard, please vote for the recap measure before you. We need a Gold's Gym in our neighborhood. Commissioner Leonard, please vote for the recap that will be coming before you because we have voted to have a Gold's Gym and the neighborhood supports that. Ironically, those emails pushed me to the position that I'm at now because I know, as you've agreed to last time, changing the zoning on a property doesn't guarantee a particular retail outlet. And in fact, in the case of this particular piece of property, you don't have a signed contract with Gold's Gym, do you?
We have had a signed lease with them, which had a time limit before that required certainty in terms of entitlement, and we've passed that time limit. They've expressed an interest to re-enter into that, but we see no point engaging with them until we have certainty.
But in any event, it would be a mistake for anybody to think that if we pass this today, that they are going to have a Gold's Gym in that building?
Well, I'm going to take the liberty of responding to what I consider the full thrust of your comments as well as your question. There are absolutely no guarantees. This process, which has gone on for nearly 3 years from now, has essentially drained a lot of the capital that was going to provide equity to make the building happen. So we're going to have to, once we know we have a certain environment, we're going to have to try to restructure the entire process. We, from day one, when we chose not to sit back and collect rent from 7 years from Wild Oats, which we could have and left the building vacant, but because we had a commitment to the neighborhood, we decided to take the risk and terminate that lease. We got $300,000 from them. We've blown through that. Since then, we've blown through nearly $200,000 of our own, paying mortgage payments while we're waiting to get certainty in the environment. As a result, we might be unable to execute on the project. There are no guarantees. Our intent is still the same. I think I have a great track record in this town in terms of the projects I've done and following through on the intent.
You do.
The broader issue is that not only have individual neighbors commented with emails, but the deliberative bodies of the neighborhood process, both the Hosford Abernathy and Richmond Neighborhood Associations and the Business Association, have considered this fully. They're not confused about whether or not it's a Gold's Gym issue or whether it is an issue about making potential anchor buildings that are functioning as anchors in retail nodes viable again when they get a change of use. And those neighborhood associations have directly supported it through a deliberative process. And I have a lot of respect for their judgment. And that's why initially we chose to go through the process with the neighborhood had outlined. And so
which leads me to my next question. The current code doesn't prohibit you from entering into an agreement with Gold's Gym or any other athletic facility. In fact, it just describes a process. And in fact, the Bureau of Development Services has approved the variance that you requested for a Gold's Gym. Why would you, if you, utilizing the process that exists, that actually approved the gym to exist there, why would you propose to change the zoning for the entire stretch of division between 12th and 60th that then impacts a variety of other buildings with potentially unintended consequences to accomplish your goal of just having a Gold's Gym in that one site?
Two reasons. One, why the larger area? The believe it or not, I'm concerned about more than that building. I spent a year as a commissioner's assistant in the city. I spent 5 years sitting on the planning commission. I have a broader perspective. Division Street is not in a position to have a retail mall. The way the zoning works on Division Street, the only way you're going to have a vital retail activity on Division Street are strong nodes. From years of experience as both a real estate investor, the corner of 15th and Alberta, that kicked off the redevelopment on Alberta, the corner of 15th and Fremont, and the New Seasons and prior nature stores, my experience is that an anchor use that generates enough traffic to enable smaller businesses to function is really necessary in the absence of a retail mall like Hawthorne, where you have enough continuous zoning to create its own retail synergy. Given that, I believe that each of those nodes needs the ability where they have existing building and to do it. And if I had written my ideal version rather than focused on pre-existing buildings, I would have focused on the nodes. But I'm not the only person in the process. And the effect of focusing on pre-existing buildings and the economic realities of the buildings, as staff was telling you earlier, is effectively they narrow down to the nodes. At 20th and Division, at 30th Division and ours, and I don't know what the fourth one is. So that's number one as to area. Number two, why change in process? Because after we spent 2.5 years trying to go through the process, and the let me back up. This piece of code is experimental. It hasn't been done. The existing code was experimental. You argued earlier, why use code to change an existing code? Well, why take a code solution that is too risky? Well, anytime you adopt code is risk. We took the risk when we adopted this original piece of code. It has unintended consequences that all those involved in the neighborhood and leadership positions have come up here and told you about.
Can you explain what that means, unintended consequence? What is that?
The economic effective consequence of using the adjustment process, which is subject to appeal to LUBA, is to effectively make uneconomic the redevelopment of existing buildings with two stories and drive owners who are merely interested in maximizing their bottom line to draw, and who ultimately they are we are all interested in that to some degree, when necessity sets in, drive us into the position of having to maximally redeveloping essentially the clay rabbit type development. Because once you tear down the building, then you suffer those costs and it creates an inevitable pressure.
So can I just summarize so that I don't want to mischaracterize your concern?
Thank you.
In your view, it is an unintended consequence if a person from the neighborhood appeals.
Let me finish.
Because I want to. If a person in a neighborhood appeals a Bureau of Development Services decision, as outlined in the code, to the Land Use Board of Appeals, and that takes time, and then they remand that back to the city with specific instructions. I did in this case. That is what you're describing as an unintended consequence.
No,
what is
I'm that? Describing as the unintended consequence. What comes out the back end of that?
What is that?
That you make it, you create a tremendous economic incentive to demolish existing buildings and develop them to
what
the fullest extent.
What is it that makes that happen?
It is the fact that our only process for dealing with this is one that is subject to great delay.
But that's the appeal. That's what I described, and you said that that's not it.
The words that you used were that the unintended consequence is having somebody appeal it. No, the neighborhood had no idea. The neighborhood leadership, and we have at least one member of them here who could be certainly glad to speak to the point, had no idea that by using the adjustment process as the opportunity for the neighborhood to comment on it, that they could be creating a situation where it would take upwards of 3 years to get a decision, and they'd be faced with a building in limbo. If the neighborhood leadership had no idea that it could take that long, then taking that long is an unintended consequence.
Well, I would heartily disagree. I mean, having sat here and, for instance, listened to the Northwest 23rd Garage debate for precisely three different long, exhausting meetings, all of which ended up back here by using the exact process that you're calling an unintended consequence, I cannot imagine any of the members of the council looking at the neighborhood and say, you know, you've really created an unintended consequence by using the appeal process to LUBA.
I'm not commenting on the Northwest District Association.
But
I'm saying it's analogous to this. I don't believe so. I disagree.
So, I guess I'm unclear then at this point. We have developed, and I developed draft language. Did you see the draft language?
Or no, it hasn't been shared with, to my knowledge, the other council members or us.
I'm not sure that that's accurate, if it has or not. But it's language from the Bureau of Development Services that addresses what LUBA said needed to be addressed in terms of defining what a locally serving business would be. I think we had the computer system break down last night
twice,
and we
I have not seen it. Anything that requires us.
Can we get them?
Excuse me, Stan. We've had a server go down, and so we're all caught between a server and a hard place.
Here's four copies.
Okay.
Can you just pick one and pass one along?
He's the only one that raised his hand.
Thank you. And you're going to get a copy right now. I didn't know it, but I had copies of them sitting in my pile. And
anything that requires us to return to the adjustment process creates a situation in which we only one member of the adjustment committee who was there when this was originally heard is going to be there. We effectively reopen the entire issue and go through the process again. At this point, I'm exhausted. The neighborhood's exhausted. We've been at it 3 years. The neighborhood's suffered. The business across the street have suffered as a result of a dark building. We had a brief period of having it occupied by a campaign. Any decision by the adjustment committee is far more liable to a successful appeal to LUBA than a legislative decision by council. I believe we as a city made a legislative mistake when we adopted the code the way it is now, and we ought to fix it. Thank you.
So I think this discussion has been good, but I'd like to, if it's okay, bring it to a close. I'd also like, Linda, if you could, since I wasn't here last time, if you could represent the neighborhood perspective on this, if possible. And then we'll move to council discussion. And in terms of council, after we have some initial discussion, I would entertain any amendments before we actually take a vote on the matter.
Okay. Linda Nedekoven, former co-chair of the Hosford Abernathy Neighborhood Association, current hand board member. As indicated, our hand board has on several occasions supported trying to find a compromise that would allow this particular stuck place to be resolved, where we found ourselves in some unexpected places, unintended consequences. We thought when we were working on the Green Street plan that we were trying to protect ourselves from someone aggregating property and building some sort of big structure on the street. We thought we had three large anchor tenants in place. The uses kind of, which of course is naive now, I realize, determined. We had a Wild Oats grocery store. We had a New Seasons grocery store. We had a Rite Aid at 39th. Those three buildings were exempted in the original code from the 50,000 square foot limit because they were, you know, obviously meeting that nodal anchor function. Division we deliberately kept the zoning so that we have housing that sort of is interspersed among the commercial nodes, because again, the street, we didn't want it just to turn into some, again, sort of strip overnight without any kind of thought and a kind of natural evolution as things, you know, so that we would add commercial perhaps in the future as we needed it. But we felt we had enough commercial zoning if we dealt with all the mismatched zoning that was currently left from the 1980s. You know what the corridors are like. Okay, so then this was a surprise to us that, in fact, this building went vacant because of a change. So, and then we found ourselves where it was another business owner appealing. The question is still remains, would this appeal have taken the course that it took if there hadn't been another competing business of the same kind on the street as the one that was being proposed for the use of this building? And you had, at least to my mind, large turnouts at several neighborhood meetings. I believe we had three sort of, you know, all-comers community meetings that the neighborhoods helped to publicize and sponsor jointly, because this building sits on the edge of the, on the out, just outside the Hand neighborhood. So we work with Richmond and the Business Association to try to bring everybody together who's on the street and affected by division issues. We have our Division Vision Coalition. So we had a number of community meetings. We had very detailed conversations looking at the potential if we were going to go out with the health club route, which was one of the things that had shown up in a neighborhood survey as an unmet need on the street. When we look at what kind of mix do we have here, you have a health club, which serves, I think, a bit of a niche population, if you will. We, as the Hand neighborhood, has worked with the previous owners, the original Laprinzis. We've done historic oral history interviews with folks. We have great respect for that establishment and would like to see it continue to thrive. So we've always felt a bit caught in the middle, not wanting to choose sides, but not wanting to get in the way of what a lot of neighbors were saying was still an unmet need on the street. So we found ourselves where the appeal process was going in a direction that was against, it seemed, the tide of a lot of neighborhood sentiment. A lot of the neighborhoods were saying, yeah, this is the appeal process. We got to have a say. We were in favor of the adjustment, and so this is how the process was supposed to work. But instead, the appeal process, the appeal to LUBA and everything else took much longer than we expected. We have not been through the Northwest neighborhood wars yet. We haven't had that scope of struggle, I think, in our neighborhood in the past. We've worked a lot on consensus and compromise and whatever we can. We do have a strong split within our neighborhood in a sense where I think everybody in theory thinks local businesses are a good thing. Some people would like to have nothing but local businesses on the street and would like to see if we could zone appropriately. Other people, of course, we have neighbors that were very happy to take contributions from Starbucks that supported our local elementary school. So we have these kinds of competing themes, in a sense, that go on. And so part of, again, the it's the definition of locally serving versus locally owned. You know, how do you you split out a franchise? Is our beloved Division Street Hardware locally owned since it's a franchise? I mean, we kind of can tie ourselves in knots around these issues, and we've been trying to figure out, you know, a middle path that tries to bring into account the concerns of all the parties involved. And we've really pride ourselves on trying to be as transparent and open and above board as we possibly can with all these conversations. And if we don't get a good turnout at a given neighborhood meeting, we're down to our usual 25 or something on an issue. That's not for lack of publicizing or trying. And I know that in some of the previous testimony, people have questioned the validity of the neighborhood system and the business association system for taking stands on these issues. But we have tried to have very open meetings, and we've had, as I said, a good turnout, you know, 40, 60 people at public meetings to plan this facility or to talk about what use this building should have. This is what we want to have on our streets. This is the kind of, it's, again, another of the ironies. We've had a developer who's worked with us and has tried to understand what the vision for the street was, kind of even adjust his own vision because it was perhaps different as a business owner than, you know, kind of what the neighbors and the business community had come up with to date. So it's, in some ways, the process has worked so well. And in other ways, it's gotten us here where we seem to be stuck.
As usual, you've done a great job of summarizing the variety of views. from the Neighborhood and Business District Association. Just so that I'm clear, did the Neighborhood or Business Associations then take a position to vote yes or no on this issue?
Yes, all three. Richmond Hand was unanimous. I can't remember what the vote was from the Richmond board, and the Business Association also went on record. I was at that meeting, and I'm the liaison to the Business Association, so I'm regularly there. Also voted in support of this change.
Questions from counsel?
So one of my questions is that this is not a quasi-judicial hearing. It's not just about this particular property. It affects others. So, and I see in the record that the process for this particular property has been exemplary and it was a contact with the neighborhood and the proposal was adjusted in response to that. But, and I think perhaps Commissioner Leonard, the unintended outcome was that some of the language to define what's small in scale and as far as what the adjustment committee came up with was not defined in the code. So therefore, that your amendment proposes to fix that process and continue to have these future applications go through the adjustment process. What's being proposed today is that we would allow them by right. But we still have the bullet in the code that says that the purpose is to provide neighbors with the opportunity for early input. And under the proposed regulations, there's nothing that does that. There's no required contact. Is that of concern to you?
Yes, I wish that we could build in at least, at a minimum, the level of contact that we have built into the code for multifamily dwellings, where I believe it's five or more units. There has to be a written contact with the appropriate neighborhood association and coalition. And if it doesn't say, I'm not sure how the code treats business associations, but they don't seem to get notices on things sometimes, and I think that's a problem.
So we're going to fix that.
Yeah, good. So I would like to see at least a minimum that there would be a notification and a requirement to attempt to meet. Obviously, if there's a situation where there's no neighborhood out there willing or interested to meet with a given developer in a given situation, you can't force it, but at least something that requires the contact and the intention to meet.
And is the concern that on other properties there might be consolidation of properties and expansion to two, three, or four stories of large development, is that of concern to you?
Well, I hadn't understood what was presented this morning to be the case. I hadn't realized that. I thought if a property owner added more than a certain amount, a certain percentage onto a building, that it then was treated as new construction and then would therefore be covered by the 50,000 square foot requirement again. So I was an error in terms of my understanding of that.
So that is a concern.
That is a concern. Thank you.
Get a quick clarification here. Is the possible scenario outlined by Commissioner Fritz indeed your understanding of what could happen?
Yeah, as I described
you
earlier,
your name.
You could increase the square footage of a different building.
Your name is?
I'm sorry, Eric Engstrom with Planning and Sustainability.
It's my job.
It's a big one.
I'm going to look to Douglas Hardy, who's in the audience too, from the Bureau of Development Services.
Come on up, Douglas.
Just to confirm that I'm correct in my understanding that there's not some magic threshold of change when something is considered a new building versus an existing.
Right. Douglas Hardy, Bureau of Development Services. Welcome, Mayor Adams.
Thank you.
There is no sort of magic threshold within the zoning code that said if you add over a certain amount of floor area that suddenly it's considered new development. So you could add any unlimited amount of floor area up to the maximum FAR, and it would still be considered expanding that existing building.
I would add one thing, that there is a neighborhood contact requirement elsewhere in this plan district code that applies to other kinds of things, and so it's conceivable you could offer amendments to...
But there's a distinction between a requirement to contact
yes.
and a process by which you can object.
Contact weaker in terms of yes. the neighborhood's ability to appeal.
But
certainly.
Could you describe what that contact requirement is in this plan district?
Going to have Phil Namony do that.
Oh. because we also have a different contract requirements in the land division code, and we, as you say, we have it in the multifamily, and we want to make sure that it's as strong as possible.
So there's a contact requirement already for proposals that don't require a land use review if you're going to add more than 5,000 square feet of gross building area to a site.
And it, and what is the contact? What do they have to do?
What's the protocol?
They have to send a letter to the Neighborhood Association offering to meet before they can submit their application.
Same.
But there's nothing in it that says they have to respond to the neighborhood in any affirmative way.
Okay. Thank you.
And which, as the commissioner in charge of Bureau of Development Services, is an unending source of anger and frustration to neighborhoods, because I hear about that provision all the time. So I know from experience that's a distinctly almost misleading provision that lets neighbors think that they have some input that they do not.
Well, what the sad part is that we've had nothing. I mean, it's only been very recently that we even got a letter that there someone was building a large multifamily. And I've written to you recently, as you recall, asking that we at least get a notice when a large multi-use building is going into a neighborhood, even if it meets zoning code, so that we have a chance to talk with the developer and try. And the struggle that we always have is trying to look at the entire corridor instead of site by site, so that you're looking at where do your third spaces come in, where does your green space come in, where. And there's, you know, again, we have no opportunity to have those kind of conversations to help developers talk to each other about the impacts that one building will have on another, or in the whole feel of the street.
And thus you have put your finger on why I think, with all due respect, you guys have gotten this wrong. I've heard from people who came to the neighborhood meetings who wrote me and said they were there and were indignant and said, we voted to have a Gold's Gym on this site. You need to support us. So for what, and I know you understand the distinguishing characteristics that Stan testified to as to what can or cannot happen there, what's agreed to or not, but it is clear to me that a lot of people that voted thought they were voting to approve a Gold's Gym. One, two, second point, this is really the most important point. You would not even have had that discussion had you not had this code provision at the neighborhood. It was nice that Stan came and talked to you and worked with you, but he had to. He was required to by the code. He couldn't have got the approval he did to put the Gold's Gym in if we didn't have this code proposal before us that now you're supporting to repeal. So the very thing that you're identifying that you have problems with, you're advocating to be repealed. And I can't in good conscience agree with that, because I just know that down the road you'll have wished that you had this provision to give you some input into the process, more than just a letter at your home saying, by the way, we're doing this, see you later, but rather you actually have true input in the process.
So my question off of that point is...
And could I respond to that point too, either before or after?
Please.
Just one clarification. I think a lot of the letters that you're getting saying, I voted or I want a Gold's Gym, are coming from people who came to the all-comers community meetings, rather than necessarily the people who were at the hand meeting in June when I was in Scandinavia. So I read the minutes and I know who was there. So that was a smaller group of people, and there was a discussion, and there was an understanding, I believe, of what was going forward. I think what you're getting in terms of support for this change from people who want to see a health club on that site are people who came to the earlier meetings, wanted to be notified via the listserv or whatever, whenever some change was happening in the process, and therefore came forward to say, you know, we want to keep our gym. I don't think it's unfortunate that we can't necessarily, you know, we try to send out language that explains what's happening, but
I respond to each one and explain to them that's a mistake.
All right, Commissioner Fish.
Well, I will say that in the month and a half in which we've been having this conversation, I think that it is now eminently clear in the public record that there's no guarantee of a Gold's Gym. I mean, I think that's, and I appreciate that Commissioner Leonard, you know, pushed that point early on, because I too have gotten some of those emails. So my question is to planning staff. I have heard two different concerns raised. One has to do with the kind of notice that goes to the community if there was some proposed change. And the second is, whether or not we should entertain some cap, some percentage cap. And I'd like to hear from you whether what your recommendations back to us are as to how we might be able to fine-tune this and address those two concerns.
Okay. I'll start with the cap. You could amend the language, I think, to where it says that you can have this exception that may exceed 10,000 square feet if, I think you could add a third line there that says, if the total square footage of the building has not increased more than 120% from the original. In terms of the notice, I think I would agree with Commissioner Leonard that it's not always helpful to provide notice or if there's no input possible. And I've spent some time in BDS and know that that's frustrating. And so I wouldn't recommend that unless there's some meaning behind it.
Can I share that?
Well, I would suggest that we could improve the neighborhood contact process. And in fact, we should do that on all of the times when it's required to say something like the applicant has held a public meeting with and list the neighborhood associations and the business associations and has provided a letter to the Bureau of Development Services indicating their response to the input received. So then at least the staff at Development Services know what the neighborhood concerns are, in particular that they're looking out for those things when the permits comes in. I agree with you, Commissioner Leonard, that is not nearly as much public input as an adjustment process. My concern in this particular legislative process with the other applications that might come in is that even with the Bureau of Development Services' good work on defining what locally supporting means in the case of a gym, it's going to be difficult to be specific if it was a different use in a different site as to what's a locally serving grocery store. You know, people might come up or a locally serving whatever.
Well, what you're doing though, just to be clear, is you're trading a true process.
Absolutely.
That neighbors have demanded all over the city to have actual leverage in developments in their neighborhoods for a letter. And you can characterize the letter any one of a number of ways. You know, you can require the developer to come in and say nice things to the neighbors about their ideas, and then they go off and build what they're going to build anyway. I'm just telling you, as the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Development Services for almost 6.5 years, and Eric has been there, it is one of the most frustrating things that I have to do is to respond to neighbors and tell them why that notice was just simply that, a notice.
Well, maybe
can I ask a question of protocol procedure? Mm-hmm. Because I have had the benefit of reading a draft of Commissioner Leonard's BDS memo, and I have asked Hannah Kuhn of my office to really get her hands dirty with this. So I would say that I went from being somewhat clueless on these issues to, I hope, being a lot more thoughtful, and this is the third hearing I've attended. And as usual, Commissioner Leonard has made a lot of good points along the way. My general inclination at this point is to support the recap package provided these two amendments are at least addressed by council. And the two amendments that are interesting to me are the notice provision and whether or not we want a cap. What I'm concerned about, though, is drafting something on the fly here. I mean, we could have a discussion, craft some language. We could get a ruling from council that we could even probably vote on this today. I think it's important to bring this to closure. I mean, this is our third hearing. I think I am prepared to vote today if necessary, but based on what I've heard, I would think two amendments would be in order here, even to those who are not supporting the recap proposal, both to strengthen community notification and to put a cap, since the applicant has even floated the idea of a cap.
So I'm going to. So I appreciate those comments. I'm going to work my way down the council just to get a poll of where people are at. Commissioner Salzman?
Well, I'm also in favor of the zoning code change, and with the amendments that Commissioner Fish just outlined, I think we can do those. I mean, Eric has pretty much defined one of them. I think we can define the contact one also. But, I think this has been, again, the third hearing. The recap process itself had extensive public involvement. The neighborhood business associations have been at the table throughout this process. And, you know, quite frankly, when I listen to somebody with, I think, a lot of vision about how to make neighborhoods work and how to make businesses succeed, and I look at 12th and 60th on Southeast Division, you know, I'd like to see some other stuff be catalyzed there, frankly. It's very underutilized property. It's very anemic. And, you know, there's some good things going on there, but overall it's pretty, you know, sketchy. And so I would welcome something like a Gold's Gym or whatever goes into the Wild Oats building, and I'd welcome those types of opportunities to exist from 12th to 60th. So I'm prepared to vote for this today.
Commissioner Fritz?
Well, I'm truly delighted to hear Commissioner Leonard's commitment to public process and to respecting the adjustment process. I think that's extremely important to recognize that, in fact, the process worked as it's supposed to have done in this instance, and that the challenge we're facing today is questioning whether the legislative changes in the Division Street plan were, in fact, what we want to do at this time for all of the properties along that street.